Kentucky's Poet Laureate ends his term today on UK Perspectives. I'm Tom Goodell. Frank X. Walker became Kentucky's first African-American Poet Laureate in 2013. Today, he's in Frankfort, passing the baton to Lexington's George Ella Lyon. Frank Walker has published 5 volumes of poetry. He's the founding editor and publisher of Pluck, the Journal of Afro-Latian Art and Culture. And it's our pleasure to welcome him back to UK Perspectives. Thanks for joining us, Frank.
It's great to be here.
So in your term as Poet Laureate, what did you learn?
I learned that if I were 3 people, I couldn't handle all the excitement and requests that come with being Poet Laureate in Kentucky. Every library, every high school, middle school, elementary school committed to writing and understanding and appreciating Kentucky's literary tradition all wants a little piece of the Poet Laureate. And if they've ever been fortunate enough to have had previous Poet Laureates, that's what they use as ammunition. Well, we've had all the previous laureates. So you have to go. You know, you don't want to be the one to break that streak. But, you know, I learned that the writers are appreciated at every level in the state, and it's easy to say we have a great literary tradition when you're talking about the writers, but to be able to say that when you're talking about the audience people and the institutions and the schools and classrooms that support those individuals and their work, that makes it more special, I think.
Kentucky's a big state, and I'm sure you weren't able to visit every county, but what was maybe the most unusual place that you gave a presentation?
I don't know about unusual. All of them were very familiar spaces, you know, from prisons to middle schools, you know, sometimes cafeteria, sometimes gymnasium, sometimes classrooms. I think the most interesting space was visiting a middle school and being told that I was going to visit a small classroom of students and be walked into a gym and there are a couple of 100 kids. And then all the adults walk out. And I kept thinking, you know, are these the kids who have been punished and their punishment is listen to a poet? Because they were a little unruly and you could tell they had no idea why they were there. So most of that hour was spent just trying to get some decorum in the space. But by the end, you know, I got a chance to read some poetry and to answer questions from them. And that was a strange thing. The highlight for me was actually going home to Danville. Last year, Danville hosted the first annual Frank X. Walker Literary Festival. And it was an amazing event that brought big names like Wendell Berry and Gurney Norman, Maurice Manning, all came to Danville. And every school, every grade level had a guest author that day at all the schools in the county. And Center College was involved in it. We had a major reading that evening. We had scholars from as far away from Washington, D.C., who write about the Afro-Latian poets and my work, who were visiting. And I mean, it was just beautiful to be there after driving into town and seeing this huge green sign that said, you know, home of Frank X. Walker, Kentucky Poet Laureate. And that was a surprise to me, so I had to do a double take. But it... You know, Danville wins the prize when it comes to the highlight of that. And they kind of opened that up. At my installation, they brought 2 busloads. They let kids out of school to come down to Frankfort in the rain to be part of the installation. So I'm really proud of my hometown.
Who are some of the young poets you encountered in the last couple of years that maybe we should know about?
Oh, there are so many. You know, I'm teaching a class right now in the UK, and there are at least 3 students that are writing heads and shoulders above. I mean, they should be in a graduate program somewhere. And at least one of them has other career plans. And, you know, when I found out that, you know, her dream is to be a computer programmer, I've been trying to convince her that she could still write poetry because what she's writing is so beautiful and necessary. I'm really hoping to work closer with her and to make sure that she doesn't abandon. I mean, she's gifted. I mean, it's not that it comes so easy for her that, you know, the diligence and dedication she puts into her work pays off every time. And she doesn't cheat on a poem. And she gives it everything she has. And the final result is always amazing. And the Afro-Latin poets, I'm going, you know, I've been reading with them off and on over the semester, but, you know, Ricardo Nazario Colon, you know, Jeremy Payton, you know, Dorian Harrison, they're all writing amazing work. But I'm probably most proud of Bianca Spriggs. You know, she has a big book contract coming out of Northwestern next year, so she has all this year to, you know, she's working on a PhD at the same time, but, you know, so next year she'll graduate, and she'll have this major book come out from a major press, and we couldn't be prouder.
Kentucky's newest poet laureate, Georgella Lyon, is being inducted today in Frankfort in conjunction with Kentucky Writers' Day. What advice would you or are you going to give her?
I've already been talking to her, and I've just been telling her to pace herself. Pace herself. But she's ready. I mean, she's been doing this professionally for years, and you know, she's in the position where she'll move into it seamlessly. And part of the condition of being chosen poet laureate is that, you know, you get the option of saying your schedule can handle it or not, you know, and there's no, you know, there's no misrepresentation about how time-consuming it's going to be. But it's still, you know, when it actually hits you, you know, when the phone starts lighting up and all the emails start pouring in, and sometimes the handwritten requests coming through the mail, you know, the old-fashioned way, from some sweet old lady, you know, 4 hours away, and you think, do I call back or do I write a response that says, you know, I can't do it that day, but how about the next day? How long would it take to figure that out going back and forth? But, you know, Georgella's ready. I mean, she's, you know, we're so lucky to have her as part of this, and I was so proud to see her at Morris's Bookshop after she had found out, and we had a big old hug right in the middle of the store.
What's next for you? Do I recall hearing that you've got a novel in progress?
I have a novel in progress. I've been busy, not just doing the Poet Laureate thing, but I've been writing. You know, this year, I've, you know, my 7th and 8th collections of poetry would come out this year, and I get to, at the end of the semester, I get some time off to go teach and travel and present. I'll be in Germany for almost a month, and when I come back, I'll spend a month in Marfa, Texas, at a retreat just finishing the novel before coming back to school. So that's next, traveling and trying to, you know, make it to the finish line of National Poetry Month.
You're known for your persona poems, York, the Medgar Evers poems. Is that something that you want to continue, or are you more interested now in exploring your own voice?
Well, I never stop exploring my own voice. I think I always work on multiple projects. You know, in my literary workshop, I work on multiple projects. One of them is a set of persona poems. The other collections that are coming out, they're all personal poems, poems about Kentucky, and my time here in this space. One of the things I'll be working on that will become a persona poem final project is centered around Thomas Jefferson. And then the project after that is centered around apartheid. So I'll be in South Africa doing research next year for that particular book. But I think the persona poem and the fascination with history and what happens when people see that connection between poetry and history has, you know, it's not just an opportunity for me. It's a way for me to convince people that is a worthy new genre. I mean, there's no section in libraries or bookstores yet for historical poetry. You know, we have historical fiction, but what those collections are historical poetry. And there are a dozen other people writing them, so hopefully at some point, you know, you'll be able to convince bookstores and libraries and publishers to market that genre as an official term.
I'm intrigued by this idea of exploring the story of apartheid through poetry, because it seems to me that's one of those neglected parts of world history. I'm sure those living in South Africa grow up with the story, but it's really not something that we even think about anymore here. I know years ago we read the stories in the paper. We read about Nelson Mandela. We heard about the kinds of treatment that blacks suffered from the white minority in South Africa, but it's not something that, kind of like the Medgar Evers story, it's not something that's current for most Americans. So that sounds like a very important project.
Well, I thought so too. And the thing about it, it was the Medgar Evers project that moved me closer to recognizing how important the Apartheid Project is. You know, for us in the States, you know, we've been served a version of the story of apartheid that really is several cliches almost. I mean, we know about Nelson Mandela, we know about, you know, Winnie to a certain extent, and we may have heard of Stephen Biko, but that's it. You know, it stops after that. And we don't have any kind of a chronological thing that deals with dates. You know, we don't know the numbers of people, the numbers of children, the kinds of protest movements. You know, we've heard of Robben Island, but we don't know, other than Nelson's story, we don't know the stories of Robben Island. And part of my research will include spending several evenings on the island. They have a cottage there that will be made available for me to, you know, hopefully personify the prison, the island, whatever poems come out of being in that space, in addition to chronicling the history in a way that is not, you know, not cliche. You know, I'm focusing on a gentleman who actually spent the same amount of time in prison with Mandela, except his 26 years were in solitary confinement. So, and nobody's ever heard of him outside South Africa. And I'm really intrigued by how he survived that and what he had to do to stay mentally sharp and alive. I think that's the kind of space poetry can elevate and shine a light on and really open up this man's life and story and also talk about apartheid.
Since this is the end of your term as poet laureate, I was hoping we could persuade you to share one of your poems with us today. So what have you brought?
Well, I have a bunch of poems that I now can carry around on my new handheld device. But the one I want to read is allows me to go full circle and pay homage to a gentleman who is largely responsible for all this activity that I'm enjoying, especially in the last 2 years. This is a poem dedicated to Gurney Norman. It's called Rockstar Potential. I'm in the mountains again, listening with a smile, as a young woman writer gushes about her now 2-year-old Gurney Norman sighting, goosebumps dancing on her arms still. He's a rock star to me, she giggles. He signed my book. He told me I could write. I laugh, knowing how quickly he would reject that notion, equating what we do to the realm of auto mechanics, short order cooks, landscapers, and beauticians. There may be small college tours, late nights in Al's Bar, and the occasional groupie, but no loud instruments or speakers. It means something to be a writer in Kentucky, though we don't trash hotel rooms, destroy computers and book reviews on stage, or dive into audiences with our eyes closed. At least, not yet, anyway.
Maybe you can smash a cell phone on stage someday.
A ream of paper, right?
What does raises a question for me. You mentioned reading that poem from your phone. Do having phones and tablets make it easier for you to write? Does having that kind of access and the fact that you can be, you know, sitting at a medical appointment and jot down a poem? I mean, we could always do that with pen and paper, but right. But does this kind of device make it easier?
It does make it. It makes it convenient, but maybe not easier. In fact, the reason I switched to a larger phone was because I have these large fingers, and I struggle to hit the right, you know, if not for, you know, the not usually helpful spell check on the phones for me or the auto-correcting. It was just so frustrating to write, but then my daughter convinced me to just get a phone with a bigger face and to turn it sideways, and when I saw how large the keyboard was, you know, I got excited. So, the poems I've written for National Poetry Month, most of them have been on a handheld device. But then I transfer them to my journal and edit them in that space. But it's just c- convenient. It's not necessarily easier. I still think I prefer to have the time and space to be able to write longhand in a journal with an ink pen. But I'm also trying to be part of this new century and take advantage of the technology, but, you know, not be married to it.
And autocorrect could lead you in some whole new direction you hadn't thought of.
I resist autocorrect. It has not been my friend as a poet.
Well, thank you. Our guest has been outgoing poet laureate Frank X. Walker. Our complete UK Perspectives interview is available at wuky.org. For WUKY, I'm Tom Goodell.